All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
Welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off, and there are a lot of ways. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, current candidate for Governor of Texas. And today I have a really awesome guy with me, Brandon Kirby, who... helps launder money in offshore bank accounts for evil billionaire criminals like Trump and McAfee and some really cool stuff. So we're going to learn about that today. So stay tuned for that. But of course, as always, before we get started, I am again going to ask you for your financial support. It takes a lot of money to keep the lights on here, especially having solar connected to it, but seriously, we do a lot with this organization, if you can call it that, Taxation is Theft. We are spreading the message that taxation is theft all around the world, and we need your support to keep doing it, and to keep growing, and to reach even further. So head over to taxationistheft.info and support the show, even if you just subscribe, even if you just get on our mailing list, or if you really want to be cool, get one of these awesome hats that I'm wearing. Or a flag, like one of these. And yeah, anything you get over there helps to support our efforts to end taxation around the world and shut down the IRS and make them all go to hell so we can all pay $0 in taxes like our good friend Mr. Trump. Anyways, on to the show, Brandon. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And... since I figured you were going to be drinking, I figured I would be classy and grab a drink as well.
Of course. For anybody watching this on Being Libertarian Canada, and I will post this on Being Libertarian Canada, maybe Being Libertarian, the main page, you know me as the drunken libertarian, but we very quickly identified the difference between Mexico and the Cayman Islands. Some classy scotch versus whatever the hell you've got.
Dos Equis in a can.
There's the difference. There's the difference between a taxed country and an untaxed company or a country.
Yeah.
In perfect world, always, it would be companies.
I don't always drink beer out of a can, but when I do, it's Dos Equis. Yeah, normally, I don't know. I kind of grew out of alcohol a little bit and kind of switched over to weed. So this is all that I have, but also we're still moving into this place, so... I haven't stocked up the bar yet. I'm full of excuses. If you want, I can go on.
I think we've heard enough.
All right. Fine. Party pooper. Before we get into like all this money laundering stuff, which sounds fascinating because I have a few dollars I'd love to launder.
I'm an anti-money launderer.
Yeah, there we go.
For the record, just in case CSIS is listening, I am in fact an anti-money launderer, and I can guarantee you they are listening. So,
well, hopefully we'll stir up some controversy with them, or at least I will. I don't want to get you mixed up in all that kind of stuff. So yes, if you are listening, I'm making stuff up. I have absolutely no idea what he does, and that's why I have him on the show, because I want to find out. But before we get into that, we were just talking about how my nephew actually lives in Georgia. Where? The state of Georgia. He sent me a video. Apparently, the Supreme Court of Georgia, the state of Georgia, not the country. You're like the only person who would have asked me that.
I deal with money launderers from Georgia, the country of Georgia.
Nice. So, apparently they confirmed that you have a right to resist unlawful arrest, which is really awesome. And apparently it went all the way to the Supreme Court because their trial court and their appeal court said, no, you don't have a right to resist an unlawful arrest, which is bullshit. I can't believe it went through two courts like that. But it was really interesting. And so we were just talking about the, you know, like, what are the differences and the consequences? Because, yeah, you're still going to get arrested. They're probably still going to, like, take you to trial or something. Hopefully, I guess if it was an illegal arrest, then they wouldn't have a whole lot of evidence to use anyway. So that trial probably wouldn't go anywhere. But you still spend the night in jail, and what comes of it? You can try to sue the police, but they've probably, you know, got their immunity. But what was interesting about this case was apparently the guy was thrown in the back of a police car for violating his probation, and it was an illegal arrest because I guess they didn't have enough evidence or enough something to say that he was violating. I don't know. Anyways, but he's in the back of the police car, and he's kicking the doors, and apparently he damaged the doors of the police car, and so the government charged him with damaging government property or interfering with government operations or some shit like that for resisting an unlawful arrest. And so the Supreme Court of Georgia finally said, no, actually, if he would have kicked the door off and got out and ran away, that would have been totally cool because that was an unlawful arrest. That's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
If you ask me.
Good for them. Good for the state of Georgia. Yeah. Hey, no, I got American knowledge. That is Newt Gingrich's home state. Right?
All righty then.
Okay, yeah.
I had no idea.
Look, anytime I know something about America, I just want to play my cards.
Newt Gingrich is American? I thought he was British. I thought he was that. Oh, no, I'm thinking of, like, that other guy, Gingrich Khan, or no. Wow, I don't know. I'm terrible with history, actually. Okay, so let's hear about this, because I'm really interested in this. I've always, like, had this dream that, like, one day I'm going to own an island, and I'll probably have, like, millions of dollars in American money stashed under my mattress or something, and I don't know how that works. And, like, it's interesting, because before I got into this whole idea that nobody has to pay income tax in the United States, that, like, oh, yeah, offshore companies is where it's at. And you're kind of into that. So, yeah, what's the scoop, man? How do I keep my money safe from the government?
Well, I mean, first, a little bit about what I do, just to clarify. I'm an anti-money launderer. So a lot of people have this conception of money laundering that it's tax evasion or tax avoidance, whichever term you prefer. That's not the case. Money laundering is funds that are coming from criminal activities, such as sex trafficking. Wrote a suspicious activity report in 2018 that led to the arrest of 5 sex traffickers. So really proud of the work that we do in the Cayman Islands. Right. It can also be money that's going to criminal activities such as terrorism. My boss's boss actually intercepted a $1 billion payment coming from North Korea going to an Eastern European nuclear research facility. So that's what anti-money laundering is. That's the sort of people that we tackle. Now, people who just want to avoid paying their taxes, absolutely. You can incorporate in an offshore account and pay no taxes on your investments. So that's perfectly valid. If you do the distributions and you're residing in the country at the time of the distributions, if you're residing in the country at the time of the distributions, then you are going to have to pay taxes on that. So you'd want to reside in a different, a more tax-friendly jurisdiction like Cayman Islands, Bahamas, BVI, Jersey, a country like that that's actually tax friendly rather than countries like America or, heaven forbid, my home and native land of Canada. You don't want to pay those taxes. But even if you do reside in those countries, it's sort of like, to use the American terminology, a glorified 401k. You can get a tax write-off for when you put the money in there. It grows tax-free, and then you do the distributions as you see fit.
Right.
That's
so,
it in a nutshell.
So once you take your money out, like, let's say, okay, I've saved up like a couple million dollars in the Cayman Islands, and I want to buy a big, nice, fancy house in the United States. As soon as I bring that money in, then it's supposed to be taxed or something, right?
Unless you do the distributions while you're residing in another country. If you do the distributions while you're residing in another country, then you're fine. You come back, and it comes back untaxed. Now, that depends on the jurisdiction. Different jurisdictions can have different laws with respect to that, but that's typically how that works.
That sounds
like so you could reside. What's that?
Yeah, it sounds like you need to hire a lawyer or something to like figure it out.
Well, you can simply live in the Bahamas for, in the case of Canada, I don't know the American laws. I probably should have looked them up before I came on. But in the case of Canada, you can live in the Bahamas or the Caymans for 6 months, declare non-residency. And then when you've made the money, you come back. So you can live in one of those countries for, let's say, 6 months. And then you come back to, you want to buy a nice fancy house in Beverly Hills. You can do that, and then it's tax-free. But you have to live outside the country for, in Canada's case, at least 6 months.
Nice. So this is really interesting. What you know, this other stuff you're talking about too, because like I've had to deal with all kinds of bullshit. Government going through my money. There have been times down here in Mexico where they ask me for my social security number and some other shit, and it's usually to stick on like some. They say it's for money laundering or anti-money laundering, I guess. Know your customer, something like that.
KYC. I'm a KYC contractor. I know all about it.
Yeah, it just seems so weird that, and like. It seems so weird that I'm in a country that's not the United States and they ask me about a social security number.
Yeah, so that's something that's called FATCA. I don't know what FATCA stands for. I don't like FATCA. I don't like to deal with FATCA. We've got a whole other, when I was working for the Maples Group, they're the largest hedge fund service company for the largest domicility for hedge funds in the world. But when I was working for Maples, there was a whole other division that dealt with FATCA. But it's the same thing. So if you're in Canada, if you're in Britain, when people are opening up, let's say, a bank account, they're still going to ask you if you have U.S. tax implications. That's going to happen. That was something that was developed in 2010. Funny story, not funny comically, but I don't know. Funny seems like a good word to put in there. So Barack Obama, my father, who's Caymanian, he was working at, I don't recall what the name of the organization. He was in the Ugland House. So it was Maples and Collar, I guess. But when he was in the Ugland House, Barack Obama was debating with John McCain. And everyone in the Cayman Islands are big Barack Obama fans. It's a race thing. So anyways, they were all rooting for Obama. And during the debate, they were watching it live. Obama said, there's a building in the Cayman Islands, the Ugland House, which is where my father was in at that time when he said it. He said, they've got 12,000 companies registered there. That's either the world's largest building or the world's largest tax scam. So all the people that he was working with, my father's a big Republican type. I'm a libertarian. We have it out, but they all switched. They switched sides pretty quick on that. I think I got a little... I got a couple of libertarian converts out of there when I went down and I preached the gospel of liberty.
Nice. Yeah, that's got to be kind of threatening. But yeah. Sorry,
what was your question?
It had to do with like the, I guess, the FATCA.
FATCA. Yeah. What's happening there is Barack Obama, 2010. That's how I got off on a tangent. I do that. You're going to have to keep me on track. But. Oh, yeah. 2010, Barack Obama started this repatriation of funds program called FATCA, where they're basically, the idea was to go to various jurisdictions. Now, he didn't really have much success with it. Donald Trump, on the other hand, put that program on steroids. He's really trying to strong arm these other jurisdictions. So what he's trying to do is repatriate American funds, the funds that are earned elsewhere, but you'd have to pay the taxes within the United States. Not a high level of compliance, as you can imagine, but the companies are at the very least saying, look, here's the form. My company would occasionally comply depending on what the situation was. I was supposed to insist on, give us your, what do they call them, W-11s? Is that what it is?
I don't know if they go up to 11, they go up to 9 at least.
W9s, yeah, that could be it. But anyways, I'd say, okay, we'll fill out this form. But if they never did, I didn't care. It had nothing to do with money laundering, so I just ignored it. And if they didn't fill it out, it was really on them. It's the onus is on the individual taxpayer. They tried to do the strong arming, but if there's no compliance, there's no compliance. Really, what are they going to do? They're going to send in the troops? Like, it's not something that a lot of companies comply with.
Right.
It's the same thing in Canada. We do the same thing with FATCA. So we say there's a disclosure saying you have to report this. We require this information. And if you just don't report it, then how would we know whether or not somebody's an American? It's not something that has a whole lot of teeth. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of stuff that a lot of jurisdictions have agreed to, but it's not a program that has teeth.
Right. Interesting. Wow. Yeah. And I remember I went to Jamaica a couple years ago, and I was asking a broker down there what it takes to get involved. And the first question he asked me, are you American? Well, first you have to fill out the IRS form. That was the first thing he jumped to. And I was like, you son of a bitch. yeah. It's so weird. Cause it's like, you made the point that they can't really enforce it, but like, what were they thinking? How were they thinking this unless they're really going to strong arm these other nations? Because I mean, yeah, they have no obligation to comply with any American law, unless, you know, through banking regulations and all this other shit.
Go ahead.
Well, so, okay, there's this story I heard about, like Visa and MasterCard. And I don't know if I might be screwing this up a little bit, but so the United States hates offshore gambling. And so what they did was, since it was legal in the jurisdictions where like some of these online gambling places were doing it, They couldn't go shut them down. But instead what they did is they passed a law saying if you have any involvement with it, like Visa and MasterCard. So even though you like Visa and MasterCard might even have like separate corporations, if you have an online gambling agency that accepts Visa or MasterCard, that means Visa or MasterCard is participating in that, and their home headquarters is in the United States.
Right.
So now, therefore, they're involved in offshore gambling. And so in that way, they basically strong-armed these companies to not accept money for these businesses that were completely legal in their own jurisdictions, which is total bullshit. Now, I think I don't know if that's still going on, because I think I was looking at some online gambling recently, and I think they are doing MasterCard now. I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, you can. There is a bit of an issue from a money laundering perspective. And again, this is not a taxation perspective. Like this, it's got nothing to do with taxation. But with the rise of fintech, how I got into anti-money laundering was through cryptocurrency. I won an investment competition because I was doing a lot of investment with cryptocurrency, and the organization that I went to go work for, they were having a real hard time. Like anybody that wanted to deal with cryptocurrency could run roughshod over these people with respect to the AML policies. And they had no idea what it was, even let alone how to combat it. So that's how I got involved with it. It's not a government thing. I'm a voluntarist. Like I was working for a private company servicing hedge funds in the Cayman Islands. It's not a government thing. It's just I don't like sex trafficking thing. I don't like terrorism sort of a thing. So I like it when private organizations do things to combat this. I think there's a little bit of government overreach in the organization that you're talking about, but there's the sentiment that there's really nothing right now in terms of KYC, know your client, know your customer, depending on what country you live in, where there's nothing in terms of cryptocurrency in a lot of countries, nothing in terms of online gaming, nothing in terms of online gambling. So a lot of people really don't know where this money is coming from. It could be conceivably coming from sex trafficking. And so the sentiment is, let's crack down hard on it. Where the overreach is coming from is saying none of this at all. I mean, who the fuck's against fantasy NHL? Like, or any of these other online gaming sort of your online gambling, poker, like, you know, you can have a little bit of fun there. So you can't crack down on the whole industry, but you can, I would say, suggest, especially if you're MasterCard, say, who are you? Who's using this money? Where MasterCard already does this. They already have things like proof of address. They already have reasonable confirmation of your ID. They already have their KYC completed. So if you're with MasterCard, they've already done this stuff. So I'm not a big fan of the overreach in that situation. I'd agree with you. I think there's a little bit of bullshit going on.
Yeah.
But there is, I just wanted to say, there is like a legitimate sentiment for what they're going after. That's all I was trying to say.
Right. Well, and that's interesting too. So you've been kind of the whistleblower in some of these cases. What's like... Well, first, let me ask this. Like, why would anybody come to you and give you their information? Are you like part of like a bigger organization and you're kind of like the fact check department, or how does that work?
Yeah. So basically, let's say you have a hedge fund in wherever, Bahamas, Singapore, Cayman Islands. I typically dealt with the Cayman Islands, but I dealt with a lot of people out of Delaware as well. They don't want to be dealing with dirty money. They don't want money that's going to terrorist organizations. There's legal ramifications. It's illegal, but there's ethical ramifications. You've got ethics, huge ethics involved with that. You've got, there's reputational damage that can arise from it. All these things are cost, and they can weigh heavily on your conscience. So what they do is they pay people like me. I've got a contracting business for KYC to come in and say, who the fuck are these investors? Where's the money going to? And that's what we do.
Nice. Okay. So
now I'm the dickhead that comes along when you say, well, I don't want to tell you my address, or I don't want to give you my ID. I'm the dickhead that comes along and enforces the rules and say, well, I got to do this. So the impetus for you as the investor would be, do you want to invest in the fund? So if you want to invest in the fund, if you want to invest in this privately owned hedge fund, then you have to go by the rules that they set out. And the rules that they set out are, they need to know who the hell you are, and they need to know where the money's going when it's all over. Those are the rules. So once we have an understanding of that, then we can go forward. So I have a lot of conversations with people that, you know, I can't name names, but I will tell you this, you have heard of them. I've had conversations with them and their lawyers where they're saying, well, I don't want to give you anything. Well, too fucking bad. These are the rules. These are the rules that a private hedge fund company has set out, and they want to abide by these rules. And that's the rules we're going to go by.
Okay. So, I mean, that sounds fair as far as being voluntary. What's the, and I mean, you know, that kind of makes sense too. You know, for somebody to say, well, you know, you don't want to give the information. Okay, fine. No, you don't get to play the game, right?
Exactly.
As long as that comes from the organization itself and not from Big Brother. But I think in this case, it sounds like, you know, there is that benefit.
There is. You know, it's funny. When you're dealing with some real serious coin, like some billionaire coin, the cost of the legal fees that you'd have to pay if you did wind up financing terrorism is a lot less than the admin fees that you get to draw out of these investors. So the hedge fund managers, big time. So the hedge fund managers are like, well, what's in it for us? And at that point, there's me talking to the manager, because they could lose, you know, people love privacy. And I'm a big fan of privacy. I've read 1984. Come on. I like privacy. But I've, you know, talking to these managers, they're like, what's in it for us? And at that point, the only thing I have is ethics. I'm like, do you really want to take money that could be coming from sex traffickers? So at that point, the only thing that I have to rely on in reputational damage, you talk about a fund, but you never heard of any of these funds. Got more money in the Cayman Islands than do on Wall Street, but you've never heard of any of the hedge funds there. So the rebranding is so easy if they're caught taking money from sex traffickers or financing terrorism. Rebranding is easy peasy. The only thing I have is talk to these managers and say, is this something you really want to be involved with? And at that point, they say, well, you know what? It really isn't something that we want to do. So that's, I've never lost a client on it. I'll put it to you like that. I've never lost a client. They've always said, yeah, actually, I've got a daughter. I don't like coerced sex trafficking. So no.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm just wondering if, like, there could be some alternative system where you do something like, you do your verification, you say, okay, this guy's clean, and then somehow you or maybe you're already doing this, somehow you basically go back to the original person handling the money and say, okay, yeah, this guy's clean. I'm not going to give you his, social security number and address and everything else to keep on file with his account. Is there any sort of, because that kind of, ultimately that protects the privacy, right? Like if you're in a database and then, the government decides, oh, we're going to pass this new law and we're going to, tax billionaires at 98% just for having the money. You don't want your name associated with that money, most likely.
No.
But if it's like on the account, then you're kind of screwed.
Well, we don't really comply with any of. I've been drinking. We don't really comply with anything like that. But if there's criminality involved, not tax avoidance, but actual criminality, the only thing that we could be conceivably involved in that would be contradictory towards a libertarian perspective was drug trafficking. Now, I'll tell you. I worked with the Chinese, and I love the Chinese. They're terrific. They're wonderful people, but they love the law.
You sound just like Trump. They're terrific people. I love the Chinese. I'm sorry.
Well, I do. They are terrific. What part of that is wrong? What part of that is incorrect?
For some reason, those just totally sounded like his words.
I've got some stories about Trump with this, but I really can't get into them. But I'll tell you, Chinese are wonderful people, wonderful, wonderful. And they what they did was you'd have a guy who sold pot in university, and this would show up on a criminal background check, and they'll say, no entry into the fund. And even my hard ass, he was a cop and he became a financial crimes investigator. Even he should send to them, like, give her a rest, boys. Come on. But it's drug trafficking. Well, it's illegal. There's penalties for breaking the law. They love the law. Chinese people, they love the law. And so they'd be very strict on that. For me, I potentially came across something that I thought was a cartel, and I've got Colombian family members that have been victimized by cartels. So I thought about going after them, but then I found out it was a non-issue. So I just completely ignored it. But that's the only thing that really comes up that's in contradiction to the non-aggression principle. What do you like that? And I think drug cartels do violate the non-aggression principle themselves. So I don't really have a whole lot of sympathy for them, but somebody that's just doing something that's purely consensual, the only thing that you could conceivably come across with anti-money laundering and some of the practices that they do in a Bahamas, in a Cayman Islands, in a Jersey, in a BVI, would be something like you're not supposed to be investing if the money came from the sale of something like pot, which a lot of the AML people, especially from China, a lot of them come from China. I don't know why, but a lot of them do, and they can come down pretty hard.
Interesting. So, I'm thinking about the drug cartel part, because ultimately, and I think most libertarians agree, there's nothing wrong with growing and selling weed or drugs or cocaine.
As long as it's consensual, yeah.
Right, but it's interesting because there is a lot of cartel violence. But at the same time, you're talking about, what do you have to go on? Is it mostly criminal history? Or what pops up on your screen that says, like, hey, red flag, this guy's money is dirty?
I hate to sound like a secretive bitch, And I hate people who sound like me. I really do. But there's some national security stuff. So it's really only stuff that I could talk about with the certified folks. Not, by the way, in case you're wondering, government certified. All private companies certified. But I kind of have to be a little hush-hush about stuff like that.
Right.
I'm going to be very careful what I say. There might be some stuff that I could tell you, but I've been drinking, so I might be a little bit more tight-lipped. And again, I hate people who are tight-lipped. I hate people who keep secrets.
I get it, man. You got a gun to your head. But I'll do the talking. I want to throw this out here. So if let's say, for example, you had the example of like the guy who had, you know, a pot conviction from when he was a teenager, and now he's got a lot of money. Right. Like, that's not really proof that he's into drug dealing at this point. So there's that.
Right.
But so I guess my question is like, okay, so some guy from a drug cartel comes up and says, you know, hey, I want to put my money in a hedge fund. Okay, what's the problem? Is it because let's not use generalizations here, right? Drug cartels do some pretty bad things, but is every single member of every drug cartel really bad? I mean, you might have a guy who's just the accountant, or you might have the guy who's like, maybe he's like the head of a big cartel, but he's like, he plays fair. He doesn't shoot anybody. He doesn't shoot cops. He's totally not violent. And you know, maybe he has people who commits violence within his organization, and maybe he punishes them appropriately. Maybe others are only using violence defensively. I don't know if this is actually the case, but I'm just saying hypothetically, the drug trade itself it's not a violation of the non-aggression principle, for example, just by being involved in that trade. So I guess I would think like, okay, so if somebody murdered somebody and they have a lot of money and they want to invest it in a fund, like, it almost seems like, okay, if you really want to have an excuse for not taking their money, you would really have to be able to say, okay, I know for a fact he killed somebody. And if you have that kind of information, it's kind of like, well, then the government probably would have, you probably would have gotten it from the government, who probably would have arrested him and put him in prison at some point, which means they have already paid for that. So, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like...
Well, The question comes from the source of funds. So I got into a lot of hot water once where I was investigating from the country of Georgia. It was an issue where there was a murder that took place and we were dealing with the murderer. And it's like, okay, did these funds come from a murder? So if the source of funds came from a murder, then that constitutes a source of funds from criminal activity. So in that case, you'd want to disqualify the funds. But if it's you're just dealing with a murderer who maybe went to prison, they came to Jesus, and then they went out, they made a better life for themselves, then that's fine. So you can have somebody who has a violent past. The question is, did the funds come from criminal activity? So with something like pot, well, the hell do I care if it came from pot? Come on. But a lot of people would say, okay, well, the funds were derived from criminal activity. So a lot of the people that I worked with were saying, well, a portion of his net worth is criminal in nature. And so as a result, we have to disqualify this. It's not really something that I would do, but it's something that people could do because funds are derived from criminal activity. You could have a violent criminal. You could have somebody that was part of a drug cartel. You could have somebody that was a murderer. But it depends on where the money came from. Nobody really cares about the character of the individual involved.
Interesting. Okay. I'm just trying to, I know I'm over here. Like I've got this like look on my face, like, ooh, I'm planning something evil.
The cameras are off for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is definitely, interesting because it's, that's definitely not how I thought this whole thing would work. I would think that,
yeah,
you know,
this is not the conversation you were expecting.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, like, I've seen, okay, so back, like, before I heard about Bitcoin and, like, when I was totally on, like, a gold standard Ron Paul, like, rampage. Ron Paul.
Good hell.
That's a new thing. I'm gonna get a t-shirt that says that. But I hadn't heard about Bitcoin yet, but I think it was still there. I think it was at like $12 when I first heard about it. And I know I should have bought it. So I had this idea, and I was creating like a bank, but it was like PayPal, but it was like when you deposit your money, it gets converted to gold and you don't have dollars in your account, you have gold. And like, I was like, okay. And then you get a debit card, and when you swipe it, it you know, converts at that time.
Yeah.
And
like I was like,
yeah. So, and I think gold money also was kind of like that, but not.
Yeah. I think they're the same company actually.
Okay. So, but I started getting into like all these issues with like the banking laws and all this other stuff. And I think that was right around when like KYC, like that only got created like around 2012 or something like that. Right. Or after 2008. Anyway. So,
go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm just like, you know, they're like, I'm looking at all these regulations that they're saying I'm going to have to comply with. Aside from the ridiculous amount of money that I'm going to have to fork over just to get like a surety bond, which is fucking insane. But it's like, it was absolutely insane. And I'm like, this defeats the whole purpose of this. Like, I don't want to be involved in collecting information for the government, and keeping track of people's bank accounts and violating their privacy and all this other nonsense.
Right. Right.
So it's yeah, but I mean, you know, to your point, it's like, yeah, but at the same time, I don't want to be helping, you know, pedophiles traffic kids all around the world and like, you know, all kinds of weird shit like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier on the conscience if you're working in jurisdictions that aren't involved with so much overreach.
Right.
Like in Canada, you collect people's private information, goes to the government, and yeah, that's got to weigh heavily on the conscience. That's right. You're not going to be able to sleep well at night. You're not going to be able to look yourself in the mirror.
Here, I think this is where I was going with this, actually. So one of the things that was interesting there is they wanted to do a background check on me. And depending on my own criminal history, that would determine whether or not I would be able to even operate this way. So I think that might have been where I kind of was going with what I might have preconceived about, you know, how you look at people. But whereas you said, no, it has nothing to do with their own history. It has to do with where the money comes from.
Which is an interesting
distinction.
Well, you really have to make that distinction because I know where you're coming from. Like I had an allegation against me. So there was something on my criminal record. It was 14 months, and that just made my life hell. There's so little that I could do within the financial industry with that hanging over my head.
Oh, wow.
And it does make your life hell. It really does. From the vantage point that I come at it, whereas we are privately owned, we're not, and everything's done privately. The Association of Certified Money Launderers, it's a private organization that works with people that deal with private hedge funds, that works with people who privately deal with private hedge funds. Everything's free market. The infrastructure that we've developed here is free market, and I'm proud of that. We do collect information, but if you voluntarily give this information, then you can play business with us. All, you know, what it comes down to is a lot of people like to use the term anarchist. I don't like that term because if everything were privately owned, we would not have less regulation. We'd probably have more regulation. Like our roads that are privately owned, like I own a house out on Scotch Lake, New Brunswick. It's not too far from Maine for the American audience. Private everything. You think there's less regulation or more regulation? More regulation, but it's voluntary regulation. Everything is done voluntarily, which that's what I like. There's checks and balances, but you agree to the checks and balances when you go into it. Government is a situation where you don't agree to the checks and balances, where you can have overreach, where you can have lobbyists, where you have other people that are doing it for their own self-interest, and you just get robbed blind. But I prefer the term voluntarist. I prefer a voluntarist society, which doesn't necessarily mean that if the roads were privately owned, that all of a sudden you just drive drunk. Well, if they're privately owned, if I own the roads, I'm not going to let somebody drive drunk on them. Come on.
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of that actually has to come with the amount of competition. And, you know, obviously if something's not voluntary, right. Like if you have a government monopoly, there's absolutely no competition. But you look at something like Facebook, where they've got a virtual monopoly and they have a shit ton of regulations. You look at Apple, and their fucking phone chargers. These assholes put chips in the charge cables so you can't get bootlegs. That's a form of regulation through monopoly, but it's not government enforced. It's just it's voluntary. You could switch to Android or something, but but they have that monopoly. And when it comes to, like, what about internet providers? You have an actual choice where it's easy to switch internet providers and you're not going to notice much of a difference. So there really is a lot of competition there relative to like Facebook.
Depending on where you live.
Yeah, that's true. But like Facebook, you switch, you lose everything. You lose all your information. You lose all your friends. Nobody knows who you are. That might be a good thing. But the actual cable that comes into your house, it's like you could switch. And so because of that, there's not a whole lot of regulation. And most of these guys don't even care if you're bootlegging, you know, if you're pirating shit all day. You do get warnings every once in a while, but they don't even turn you into the feds because, at the end of the day, they're like, this is competitive. We don't want to lose a customer here. And you're not interfering with the other customers.
Well, you know, I think there's something special. You really should have invited my friend Lone Gannon onto this. He's Being Libertarian. I work with Being Libertarian. I run Being Libertarian Canada. But Lone Gannon runs the tech side of things, and he's the tech super genius. My own view is with Facebook, I don't have a problem with Facebook. I use Facebook. We were messaging on Facebook. But what
don't
I have
tell anybody.
I've ruined your reputation just like that. But no, my problem with Facebook is that they use, and this was not disclosed. If it was disclosed, then I wouldn't have a problem with it. But they use these dopamine effects that get people addicted, which I think could conceivably be a violation of the non-aggression principle. If they were upfront and said, this is what we're doing to you, we're getting you hooked on the likes, we're getting you hooked on the shares, we're getting you hooked on the subscribes, then that's all well and good. And this information is coming out now, but we're living in a society that's completely addicted. In order to run a business successfully, I was a mortgage broker for a couple of years. In order to run a mortgage brokerage, well, I've got to be on Facebook. A lot of they come from Facebook. Being Libertarian, you have to be on Facebook if you want to have. I've run as a political candidate for the Libertarian Party of Canada. There's no way I could run as a candidate without being on Facebook because why? All of society has been addicted to Facebook. They specifically set out to do what I would consider harm to people without letting them know what it was. It's like putting some sort of an addictive substance into a cigarette without telling people you're getting them addicted. And Facebook does do harm to society. It does a lot of harm to society. So I think that there's conceivably, I think you can make the case, maybe I'm not making it eloquently right now, but I think you can make the case that there's violations of NAP going on with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that really is kind of a gray area because to some degree it's not like they're actually injecting something in you, right? They're providing a pleasurable experience and the dopamine comes from within yourself. So arguably, a movie theater is, they're trying to get you addicted. They get you in, you're going to see this great movie, and then, let's show them the trailers, let's get them coming back for more. And it really is that same kind of thing. And, it's just like if you take out the chemical explanation about how, dopamine works and that sort of thing, is that really different than, because what they used to do with movies, and I used to work in editing, so, what you would do is you would take and that's why everybody says, oh, yeah, I saw the trailer. That had all the best parts of the movie in it. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're just trying to give you this like compressed like thing that gets you really excited. So you're gonna be like, oh my god, I have to see that movie. And that's that. And it's right. really the same kind of a thing, right? They're giving you a chemical jolt, but in that way, they never really, because it's an older industry, they never really looked at it that way, I don't think. They looked at it more like yeah, let's just get people really excited. And, you know, without knowing, like, without having, I mean, you know, you watch the trailers, you get excited, and then you want to see the movie. But, like, nobody's sitting there telling you, oh, you know, they did that on purpose to make you go see it. Then it would be like, well, yeah, duh. Like, you know, but then if you say, well, they're making you release chemicals in your own brain, it would be like, well, that's just naturally what happens, I guess. So, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Somebody's saying propaganda is mindwash in the comments. But, yeah, I think it does become a gray line, especially when they're putting so much science into it. It's no longer just like, hey, we're here to entertain you. It's like, no, behind the scenes, we're the lab rats, and they're totally...
They're controlling the dials. Yeah,
exactly. And they're exposing us to different stimuli and seeing what our response is and using that into a feedback loop to control us. But at any point, like, they could just be like, well, you wanted to use Facebook. You didn't, like, nobody tricked you into using it. It's, I don't know. It is.
But is that the case that nobody's tricking you into using it?
I mean,
you're sort of forced to use it. Like, go ahead.
Is it any different than, like, you know, oh, the salesman tricked me into buying this because he kept asking me over and over and over again, and I finally said yes?
Well, you know, somebody, like, I'm doing an MBA. I'm plugging away at an MBA. At some point, I'm going to finish that. Don't worry. I will get this accomplished. But, you know, You're kind of convincing me to do business ethics or psychology at the same time, which maybe I could write a thesis on within the MBA. At what point does it become unethical where somebody's so much in control of the behavior of another human being that it becomes coercive?
Right.
Well, when does that happen? And I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I don't think that, as you said, it's a bit of a gray area. And I'd love to see something that's very templative where you can say, if P, then Q, if this, then yes, it is coercive.
Oh, you just dropped some modus ponens shit.
I have a philosophy degree.
Nice. I haven't heard that stuff in a while.
Oh, you studied philosophy?
No, I had this really weird math. Actually, I did a little bit. But we never talked about that stuff. We like watched movies like Blade Runner. that was in community college. But in public school, I shit you not, in middle school, I had this really, really strange teacher. And it was, I think it was sixth grade or seventh grade math. He was teaching us like modus ponens and all that kind of stuff.
No fucking way.
Mathematics, like as a math class. Yeah,
that's the math. Awesome. I've got a background in math as well. I mean, the MBA is concentrating on data analytics, but, you know, that's the math that should be taught, I think, in grade school.
This guy,
it should be taught because you use logic. You have to use logic in life. You have to think critically about religion and politics,
yeah.
Even like to dispute a cell phone bill. You have to think critically and you have to be able to communicate with logic, and instead we're teaching line bisection. You may or may not have to use line bisection later on in life. People say we have to use that in higher mathematics. You also have to use modus ponens in higher mathematics as well. You have to use logic in higher mathematics. So why not just teach the one that you actually will be using throughout your life?
Right. Absolutely. The one that actually helps you to think and find new answers and not just how to use small tools to kind of go do the same
thing. Yeah, that are useful to a small number of society.
What's really interesting now that we're talking about this, because I talk to Arvind Vora all the time, and he's, you know, he's always talking about the like, he gets into the publishers of the books and everything. This guy actually, I don't know where he got the books, but he was actually I want to say he was printing the books and like getting them bound with those little plastic spiral things. Cause right. It was like the school would not provide them. Like this was like, and this is how crazy the guy was. A few years ago, like maybe like 5 or 10 years ago, he went to the school and he was like, okay, you know what? This is my salary. If I retire today, my pension will be more than that. So I'm going to retire and I'm going to come to work for you for free.
Wow.
He was crazy. And then the school, of course, said, no, you can't do that because we don't get paid for the students. If you're, and it's like, yeah, but you also don't have to pay me. So I'm saving the whole state. Yeah, no, the government didn't like that.
Oh, there you go. There's government.
But also, okay, going back to your point, you know, at what point does something become, at what point does manipulating another person's behavior become a violation of the NAP? Because think about this. If you have a girlfriend who lies to you in order to get you to do something, like, isn't that technically, like, what's the difference between that and some guy who works at a shop and says, like, oh, yeah, all you need to do is fill out this form and write me a check and then something's going to happen and then he just runs off with your money. Like, what right. is the difference? They've through fraud, convinced mm-hmm. you to, you know, spend some of your money, some of your labor, some, you know, whatever. And so, you know, should you be able to sue a girlfriend? Well, she told me she loved me and I was the only one, but it turned out she had a boyfriend. Like, you know, I mean, I guess that's what happens when you go through a divorce. But it's like, okay, yeah, we weren't technically married, but at the same time, she did lie to me and she did cost me a lot of money. Shouldn't I be compensated for that? I think there's like a lot of, you know, we always look at like businesses. And I think that's because of like the government paradigm of like, you know, businesses are like, you know, corporations. They're big legal structures or these new legal entities. But at the end of the day, it's like, what does that even matter? It's still people. Like a corporation is nothing but a name. It's still people who are doing things behind that. And so, like, I think a lot of these same things on a much smaller scale are already happening interpersonally between individuals.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There's some extreme cases in Canada where, you know, you could have somebody that would lie, for example, about the paternity of a child. Say this is mm-hmm. your child, then they get child support payments. And not only do they get child support payments, once the lie has been detected, they can continue to collect child support payments. So, you know, there's clear-cut cases of fraud, like complete misrepresentation of what's actually going on. And I think in the case of Facebook, and definitely in the case of Google, there's a complete misrepresentation of what's actually going on. I mean, when I do a Google search, what's coming up? What do they showcase as the top result versus what are they engineering the top result supposed right. to be? So if there's a complete misrepresentation, I think that fits the definition of fraud, in my view.
Right.
Again, I'm not an expert. We're off the beaten path for money laundering and anti-money laundering and taxation. But Alon Gannon's a guy that you probably want to have on. He's a tech super genius.
All right. You're going to have to connect me with him. But, yeah, no, this is interesting stuff to talk about. I'm liking what I'm hearing from you, too.
I'm just a philosopher. I'm a lowly philosopher trying to make an eager living working for billionaire hedge funds.
That's got to be. Okay. I'm like thinking like that's like an Adam Sandler song right there. But, okay, so I am interested in this, and tell me if I'm digging too much into the wrong direction. I think this sounds like fair game. Why would somebody invest in like a small offshore, I mean, it sounds like they're not even that small, but an offshore hedge fund as opposed to like some big New York, big name, you know, hedge fund? Are the gains much higher? Is, you know, what's the deal with that?
Well, it depends on what your investment goals are. So, I mean, I've had a lot of conversations with folks in terms of investment strategy. I've got my own investment strategies. I've got my plaque right there. I got 191%. In reality, it was 192, and it was 191.7. And the dipshit that gave me the plaque rounded down. I'm not happy about that, You know, we have a lot of conversations about investment strategies, and you have to find what strategy works best for you. Typically, why you'd go through the Cayman Islands are taxation reasons. Yeah, there's some guys that are doing some great stuff on Wall Street. There's some guys that are doing some great stuff on Bay Street. You've got some guys and gals doing wonderful things with the FTSE. I'm not going to deny that. They obviously are. But the main reason why you go through the Cayman Islands are taxation reasons.
Nice. And when you say 190%, like, is that 190% gain?
No, I did not say that. What I said was 192%, and I just, like, 30 seconds ago was chastising a guy for shortcutting me, and then you just shortcutted me.
As I was saying it, I wasn't even sure if it was 190 or 170. So I went, I did round up for you.
It was 191.7. Okay. Yeah, it was a game.
Wow. That's pretty fucking awesome.
You can have some fun. If you know what you're doing, you can have some fun.
So I'm going to be sending you some money after this podcast.
All right.
See if we can
You're not getting it back.
Oh. I was hoping to get 193 times back.
Sorry, I coughed into my mic. I apologize for that. But no, I showed up. I was running as a candidate in the last election, and there were some environmentalists there, and they didn't know what to make of me as a libertarian. I was like, you know, I made 117% rate of return on my green stock portfolio. I said, what are you making me now? They didn't know what to say. So we had a lot of fun that night.
Interesting. I think I was on, Stash, and I got some green stock, and holy shit, that thing crapped out. I think I lost 193%.
What year did you invest?
Maybe like a year or two ago.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, because if the market takes a dive, then green tech takes twice a dive. If the market rises, then green tech rises twice as much. So if you think the markets are going to do well, if you think they're set up for an upswing, then green tech's the way to go because they're going to do twice as well, just due to the standard deviation, the beta, the volatility of the stock. People have more money, then they can put money into things like solar panel. If nobody has any money, they just go with their traditional energy.
All right. So you know a lot about trading, it sounds like. Are you,
I guess... I'm not a lightweight. I'm not an expert, but I'm not a lightweight.
Awesome. I got into that for a while, and then the government came and took all my money out of my account. So,
holy shit, what happened, man? Have you talked about this on the podcast before? If you have, then I don't want to bore your listeners.
I don't know if I have, but yeah, let me drop it. So, how far back shall we go? Let's go back to the very beginning. I was only a child, and Apple was going to release this new product. I think it was OS 9 was when I did this. And it was like $13 a share. And wow. I was like, Dad, we got to get some of this stock. They're going to release this new operating system. It's going to be amazing. They're going to be like trillionaires. And I think I was about 13 at the time. And so he's like, no. He's like, I know you like their computers and stuff, but yeah, it's really not a great investment. The next day it doubled to 26. And I was like, Dad, I want to buy some of that stock. And so he's like, okay, fine. So I had like $500, probably from like a bar mitzvah check or something. And so he called up his broker and he's like, yeah, we're gonna put $500 on Apple. And over the course of maybe 10 years or so, that turned into like 10 grand. Today, if I still had it, it would be like 300, I think.
Wow.
But so when it turned into 10 grand, I was maybe 20, 19, something like that. And I was like, man, I want to get into the stock market. And like they started, you know, that's when like E-Trade and all these other companies started popping up, and it was really cheap to get in. And the trades were cheap because before, you know, you had to call up a broker and it was like $100 to do a trade. And like, you know,
right.
Now it was like they were, I think at that time they were like, it was like, oh yeah, $4 per trade. And so I was getting into that, and then I started getting into options and everything else. And I made a little bit of like, I mean, I never really became an expert, but I made some good money with it. And while all this was going on, the IRS was, this is how they reported it at that time. Every time you sold stock, the broker was required to report that to the IRS as a gain from zero. Every time you bought stock, you would basically deduct that. So within 1 year, right, you would take all of your sales and you subtract all of your purchases. More or less. If you purchased 1 year and then sold it the next year, it didn't work out that way. But more or less,
it's the same in Canada. Doesn't work that way in the Cayman Islands. None of it's reported in the Caymans.
But here's the thing. The brokers didn't report any of the purchases because that was never required by law. And silly me, being like, fuck the IRS, I'm not going to file anything, didn't file anything. So the IRS said, well, we have all this. Apparently you made hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of sales. And so they basically came around and said, like, yeah, so based on this, you owe us like $50,000 in taxes. Which is ridiculous, because at the end of the day, I mean, there were a couple days where I'd be up like, you know, $5,000 or something. But then I'd go, you know, lose it the next day.
You were doing some day trading.
I was getting into, contracts and everything. Contracts and futures, and like, I got lucky a couple times. I think most of my good gains were out of luck. And then I'd be like, okay, that was awesome, let me just repeat the same thing. But then of course the market doesn't repeat itself. So, you know, whenever I'd win something, I'd totally lose it. It was interesting, but I've kind of stayed out of the stock market for a pretty long time because, and it's not like the IRS is after me at the moment. But because I know how easily accessible that is to them, like it was literally like they sent me a letter saying, hey, you owe us some taxes and we think you might try to run, so we're going to freeze your accounts. And then it was like, well, I guess there's absolutely nothing I can do at this point.
Let me use that. Let me pivot off of your pain and misery callously as a Please life do. Lesson. And just say, you know, if you are going to be doing a lot of trading like that, and it's a little bit higher volume than what than what you'd be used to with a high school fund or a university fund, it's worth your while to incorporate New Jersey, the country of Jersey, not the state of Jersey. It's worth your while to incorporate, let the funds grow tax-free. Don't let any some bitch in your local government take your money away from you and say, you got to report this, you got to report that. Take the money, pay it to a corporation, deduct it as a business loss. And, you know, when push comes to shove, if you don't want to do a workaround or do offshore residency or anything like that, you can come back and take it as a tax penalty. But, you know, the bullshit that you have to go through to actually do that while you're residing within a lot of these jurisdictions, whether you're talking about France, whether you're talking with UK or Canada, USA, China, like you wouldn't believe, but Australia, lots of bullshit that you have to go through. It's not right. What they're doing to the investment world is completely wrong. What you're doing was an excellent service to society. They come down hard on you, and I think that's terrible.
Oh, well, thanks for making me feel good about myself trying to become an evil rich billionaire.
You should. I'm trying myself. Not having much luck, but...
I had to look up where Jersey was. Looks like it's off the coast of France.
Yeah, it's in the English Channel. They've got great tax laws there, terrific tax laws. I don't like them. They're not perfect, but I guess, is terrific a Donald Trump word? Am I not supposed to say terrific? Is that?
I think it is. I know. I just
thought
totally
tremendous.
Like,
I thought tremendous was the Donald Trump word. I avoid tremendous.
Well, it's very
I avoid saying China. I try to avoid that too. I did. What else?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the show. This has really been some awesome information. Now, hopefully, I won't sound so ignorant if I run into some people from the Cayman Islands. If I run into some billionaires and I want to have a conversation with them, I won't sound like a total. I won't sound like one of the poors. Is that how you say it?
Poors.
The poors. I don't
the
know.
Poors?
I've seen that. I've seen that in some memes. You refer to it as the poors.
Yeah.
Which is I made this really great tweet today because I've been thinking about this, about how
wait. Twitter is a Donald Trump thing. What are you, Donald Trump?
I know. Fucking this is me. It's I'm trying to like become an evil rich billionaire. So I'm like, Twitter's got to be the way to go.
He is evil. He is rich. He is a billionaire. So there you go.
Yeah. But yeah, the taxes. We'll end it. We'll end the show on taxes, since it is called Taxation is Theft. The taxes are they're a weapon that are sold to poor people to use against the rich people to make their lives better, because it is the evil rich people who are robbing them. But the truth is, no, the taxes are a way for the government to take money from people and give it to wealthy people. And I mean, yes, ultimately, we're pretty free. I mean, we're free as far as, like, you know, we can go anywhere and do anything as long as the options are, like, you can walk into a store and buy whatever you want. But who is not free? The billionaires, or the wealthy people, the entrepreneurs who want to put things on those shelves so you will have more choices. And those people, because they're supporting higher taxes, they are ultimately giving themselves fewer options. And it's that's kind of the scam. And I know, because honestly, I hate doing the divide between rich and poor. I've been broke. I've been a hater of wealthy people. I've been there. Like all the shit I hear from, like, you know, the socialists and everything else about how much rich people suck. Like, I've been there. I get it. But ultimately, you come to realize that a lot of what you're being fed about this, the way the system works, the way the world works, is really totally bullshit. And they're tricking us into supporting systems that are the real cause of our oppression. Anyways, taxation is theft.
It certainly is. I've got a poem for you.
All right.
Roses are red, violets are blue, taxation is theft, and inflation is too.
Damn right it is. Man, Brandon, thank you. This has been awesome.
Thanks for having me. I don't know.
Yeah, go plug your. I want you to plug your stuff. That's what I forgot. Give me a plug.
Plug my stuff.
Plug me up.
There's like 100 people on the planet that would potentially buy my stuff. I can tell you right now, they're not listening. They have no interest in politics. I'm sure they like you. I'm sure they probably agree with libertarianism. They spend about 0 hours on politics. But if you are in the market, on the off chance that you're one of these 100 people on planet Earth that would buy my shit, Brandon Kirby, anti-money laundering services. I've got anti-money laundering officers. I've got KYC contractors. We can get the job done.
Awesome. Well, what about being libertarian? What about all these? Give us some websites.
Oh, there's a huge bunch of dipshits that run Being Libertarian. I'm one of them. Being Libertarian Canada. You can follow us on Facebook. Beinglibertarian.com actually is probably where you'd want to go if you're interested in libertarian opinion. We do opinion-based journalism. Beinglibertarian.com. I used to write a weekly article. I'm trying to get serious about my MBA. I don't know if that's going to be this semester. It looks like it probably won't. But when I'm not being very serious, I write a weekly article for Being Libertarian. Wonderful content there, though, from fantastic authors. It's international. We've got Being Libertarian Hong Kong. We've got live on the ground journalism for all the bullshit that's happening on the ground with Hong Kong, between China. Mikey Wong is doing a fantastic job being Libertarian UK. I do Being Libertarian Canada. We're looking at Being Libertarian South America. I've been writing about the situation in Ecuador, which is an absolute nightmare for the people there. It looks like they are very likely to become the next Venezuela. So we have to cover these tragedies. These are stories, tragic stories that deserve to be told. These are honest to goodness human beings, families that have awful, awful victimization at the hands of socialism, that we need to tell these stories, and we need to learn. We need to listen, and we need to hear their pain just so that we can improve ourselves. That's so tragic. Let me end on a happy
No,
note.
I think what's
Cayman Islands are doing well. We're rich. There we go.
did
I
you
don't want to
survive
end
the
on a
hurricane?
tragic. I'll tell you, we had a rough go with an earthquake.
Oh
Oh
man.
yeah, okay. Let's turn it totally tragic. Haiti has a 7.3 earthquake in 2010, kills 250,000 of people. Cayman Islands has a 7.7 Richter scale earthquake, kills zero people. It sucked when I was there, don't get me wrong. Like, I was sick and like was totally disoriented. And my family, the shop that they have there was all the a bunch of stuff was destroyed, but it sucked. But nobody died. It's because they're rich.
Wow.
Our architecture is a big thing. Capitalism works. Capitalism really, really works. It improves architecture. Look at LA.
Didn't, well,
Similar mag.
tell me why this. When a hurricane comes through Mexico, it barely destroys shit, but then it goes up to rich ass Texas and Louisiana, where people build their homes out of sticks.
Why are
And
they building their homes out of sticks?
I know. I mean, they're supposed to be a rich, wealthy first world nation, and down here, Mexico, they just build things out of bricks, and it's like, oh, did somebody knock? Was there something going on outside?
Dan, I'm putting you in charge of telling them not to build their homes out of bricks. That's kind of stupid. We build our homes out of sticks in Atlantic Canada, but we don't get class 5 hurricanes.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. I see this all the time in like Florida, and
Why would an insurance company insure a home like that?
Ohio, like with not hurricanes, tornadoes, Nebraska, those kinds of, like, yeah, out of sticks. Come on, guys. I mean,
Yeah,
if
well, I mean, like, I worked as a mortgage broker. An insurance company wouldn't insure a home that's not likely to survive the calamity that we'd face here in New Brunswick, Atlantic Canada.
all the time. And then these fucking idiots in California always building their homes on the mudslides. Oh, well, I guess it slid off. It's not going to slide off again. Let's just rebuild right where it was.
Fuck, man.
I guess they're
You've
like, hey,
convinced
we got
me
a
that.
$1 million. We'll rebuild it again. Who cares? Well, it gives us a nice opportunity to change the motif of the house every couple of years.
The feng shui is going to be a little different,
Oh,
but we'll
man.
rebuild. I don't know, man. Like, that's a little weird to me. I did. Like, you've convinced me to short the insurance companies that are covering these houses.
Yeah, look into it more before you take my word for it, because I've been known to just blurt things out that are totally wrong. But at least I'll admit it.
Yeah, I've never spent much time in the southern U.S. Went to Disney World once when I was 10.
Yeah.
Nice people. I like
That's
them.
probably
A lot of them
worse.
come to the Caymans. Wonderful people. Like them.
Worst place
Big
to be.
fan. Amazing. Oh, yeah, you're going to Texas, too. Yeah.
Great. I'm going to need to come visit you in the Cayman Islands, though.
I'm in Canada right now. I'm going to have to buy a...
When you get back, hit me up. I got to figure out how to get there from Mexico.
Well, I'll tell you what. Cayman Islands did a hard shutdown. The alcohol stores all... They wouldn't let them open. And it's still the case. They did a hard, hard shutdown for COVID-19. So I had to choose between paying taxes or booze.
And which did you choose?
And avoid booze. Well, my question to you is, Dan, catch the hockey game last night there, fella. How about the Maple Leafs, eh? So that's I made my choice.
Nice. All right, Brandon, it's been awesome. Love to have you back on sometime. And until next time, guys, thanks for tuning in. Make sure you head over to taxationofstuff.info. Support us by buying everything that we have to offer in the store. It's really amazing stuff. And also, if you're listening to this on Facebook or YouTube, make sure to like and share and comment and tweet and do all that kind of stuff. And, of course, go subscribe using your favorite podcast player. We're available in iTunes and Google and all those other crazy places where you get your podcast from. Go do it now, or else the IRS will rain hell down upon your bank account when you're not paying attention, because that's what they do. I'll catch you later. Taxation is theft.